Harold McGee is a food writer who doesn't write about recipes or restaurants. His writing explains how things work in the kitchen. We're not talking about appliances, but chemistry. His new book, The Curious Cook, is filled with experiments that investigate why food does what it does when we cook it. But I wasn't sure how to categorize what McGee does.
I would describe it as kitchen science rather than food science. Food science is the professional version of what I do. It's done by people in the food industries, in food science departments and universities and so on. What I do is kitchen science, which I would distinguish as an amateur activity, something that you do for the love of it and to find out whether all the lore you get in cookbooks is true or not.
What was the first problem you tried to solve?
In the case of this book, I was interested, first of all, in whether the very commonly held idea that searing a piece of meat at a very high temperature to begin with when you're cooking it will seal in the juices and give you a more succulent result.
And does it?
It doesn't. I had gotten that impression from reading the professional literature, but I thought it would be worth trying by myself, so I just went out and got a postal scale and tried it, did the obvious thing, cooked a piece of meat with searing and a piece of meat without searing and weighed before and after and found that, if anything, searing resulted in more fluid loss than the other one did.
But so does that mean you've given up searing your meat?
No, I haven't, because the idea of searing meat is a good one. It's just that the standard explanation for it is mistaken. The reason to sear meat is that it gives you that wonderful brown crust on the outside, which doesn't do anything to seal in juices, but it does, as it were, get our juices flowing by providing a wide range of flavors that wouldn't be there otherwise. So it really makes it tastier.
I wear eyeglasses, so I particularly enjoyed an experiment you did to figure out why, when you're frying food, droplets of oil end up on the inside of your lens as opposed to the outside of your lens.
That's right. You would expect the oil to be on the outside of your glasses because it seems as though the oil coming from the pan is heading straight for your face. But I discovered by setting up pairs of eyeglasses all over my kitchen and then watching for the patterns of droplet falling as I fried, that what actually happens is that the oil drops go straight up in the air and then slowly rain down for many minutes after you're done frying. And because we're looking down at the pan, the inside of our eyeglasses is actually the surface facing upwards, and so it catches all the grease.
So what's your solution to keeping your glasses clean when you're frying?
A baseball cap. It provides just the right overhang. I did wonder whether the chef's talk would do as good a job, because it has, of course, a huge overhang. You can get them a foot tall. But it turns out not to do as good a job as a plain old baseball cap.
You know, sometimes you test things that seem so obvious. I'm like really surprised you tested. For instance, one of the tests you did for your new book was you tried to scientifically measure whether blowing on a hot cup of tea or coffee actually cools it off.
Right.
I mean, you didn't trust that it did, huh?
Well, I didn't really know because you know, we do it all the time. We do it. Without thinking, and it's just interesting to me to find out how firmly based in reality our kind of everyday behavior is. And in fact, that turned out to be very interesting, because it turns out that blowing on a spoonful of hot soup or on a cup of coffee works fine as long as the liquid is very thin, as long as it's watery. It cuts the cooling time by about half, which I think is interesting to know. But if it's a thick soup, like pea soup or something like that, it does next to no good at all. You might as well just watch it.
Why doesn't it work with something thick like pea soup?
Because part of the cooling process involves convection, the movement of the fluid particles from cool areas to hot areas. You know, the surface will cool off very quickly because it's in contact with the cool air, whereas the interior, if it can't circulate, will stay hot. And in fact, the very phenomenon of convection itself was discovered because a marvelous scientist back in the 18th century by the name of Count Rumford noticed that he kept burning his mouth on stewed apples, but he never did that on a cup of tea. He could always tell when a cup of tea was cool. He wondered why it was that stewed apples behaved that way, and as a result, he discovered convection.
Our director, Chris Burgin, has always wondered why, when you put lemon into tea, the tea gets lighter in color.
Right. That has to do with the pigments in tea, which are very sensitive to acidity. Tea is almost like a natural version of litmus paper, which you might have used in high school to decide whether a liquid was either alkaline or acidic. And it turns out that the pigments in tea are a very good indicator of exactly how acidic the liquid is. So when you add lemon juice, those pigments get very light. And if you try the experiment of then adding a little baking soda back in, it'll get very dark again.
Let me ask you, do you ever do anything purely intuitive in the kitchen?
All the time. All the time. That's the way I do most of my cooking. This is something I do simply for the pleasure of understanding how things work.
Do you find that the science that you now know helps you cook more intuitively?
Yes, it does, because you know, if you don't have a sense of how things work, then I think you're much more strictly confined to recipes. You have to do things the way the recipes tell you. But if you have some sense of what these ingredients are and what the cooking process involves, then you're free to experiment, freer to experiment, because you have some sense of what it is you're doing and how a change in what you're doing might affect the outcome.
What got you started on kitchen science?
It was pure chance. I was studying literature in school, and my wife was studying biology. And my friends, my classmates, really didn't talk to biologists very often, so they asked my wife what she was doing, and she happened to be doing a project on the biochemistry of development, using as an example the bean seed, which puts down storage proteins for the growing embryo, and that's something you can study in great detail. And they didn't quite know what all this meant, so they tried to connect it with their everyday experience, and they asked questions like, well, if you know about the biochemistry of beans, then why do they turn that awful gray color when you overcook them? Or why do you sometimes suffer a few hours after having had some dry beans? And we had no idea whether anyone knew the answers to those questions. So we went out looking one Saturday afternoon to be ready for the next encounter with my friends and discovered this huge amount of information that had been compiled by food scientists for other food scientists, but never for the average cook. And so I decided it would be fun to translate that material for the average cook.
So now do you know why beans can give you gas?
Yes.
Why?
Because, as I was saying, beans are basically dry beans, a storage depot of food for the embryo to use when it begins to develop, when the seed germinates. And one of the materials the bean lays down for later use is a carbohydrate similar to starch, but sufficiently different chemically that our bodies can't digest it. And because our bodies can't digest that carbohydrate, it just stays in our digestive system. It isn't absorbed. And there are a lot of bacteria in our digestive system. And when they see something lying around unused, they pounce on it and use it with a vengeance. And in the process, the bacteria produce copious quantities of carbon dioxide. So we end up feeling uncomfortable.
Do you have you been able to make a living from kitchen science?
Some people might wonder whether it is, but I consider it a decent living, yes.
What did you do before that?
I taught literature at a university for a couple of years.
Seems like a big jump.
Well, yes and no. I went as an undergraduate to the California Institute of Technology, which is a science and engineering school almost exclusively, although I managed to escape there with a Bachelor of Science degree in literature. I've always been interested in science, but I guess you might call it the science of everyday life, not so much the esoteric things like black holes and so on, although those are interesting, but just how things in our day-to-day life work and why we do the things we do. And so I actually see it as a natural outgrowth of what I've always been interested in.
Mm-hmm. What do you think the most unusual experiment you've ever done was?
Most unusual experiment? I think that might have to be my investigation of persimmons. These are peculiar fruits that are quite wonderful when they're ripe, but before they're ripe, they're inedible. They're so astringent. And the question I wondered was whether the cook in the kitchen could do something to persimmons to get rid of that astringency at will, rather than waiting for the fruit to ripen. And I ended up discovering that the Chinese centuries ago used to take these fruits and bury them in the mud for 5 days, and that would take care of it. So my job was to find a 20th century kitchen version of burying persimmons in mud to get rid of the astringency. I tried a variety of things from immersing them in water to putting them in a little plastic bag with a canister of baking soda and water to try and generate carbon dioxide. The best trick ended up being to wrap them in plastic wrap in several layers and then stick that in an oven with just the pilot light on to heat them up just a little bit, and that turns out to get rid of the astringency. The reason that this experiment caused problems is that I forgot a couple of times to indicate on the outside of the oven that there was a plastic-wrapped persimmon inside, and my wife came in to bake something and just turned the oven on to 450, and that took a few days to recover from.
Well, I wish you a happy investigating and happy eating, and thank you very much for talking with us.
Oh, thank you, Terry.
Harold McGee's new book, The Curious Cook, is published by North Point Press.